I am a knight. I shall die a knight.
Until my last breath. No, I'm trying to remember how he does it.
I can't remember either. I have to listen to it.
I'm the queen's man still. Soon. I am the queen's man still. Today, tomorrow, always, until my last breath. Or hers. Barristan Selmy refused to believe that Daenerys Targaryen was dead.
It's really fun and cool and exciting to have the opportunity to be inside Barristan's head for the first time, because so much is happening in Meereen right now, and there's so many things that are uncertain. And so, and thinking about like his trajectory of where his, how his role is going to shape the end of this book, it's pretty exciting to embark on this little journey that we're about to embark on with him.
Yeah, we love Barristan. And so it was really exciting when he came back into the story the way that he did with Dany. Mm-hmm. We're like, oh,
that guy.
I can't believe it's happening like this. I wonder if people that watch the television show felt the same way.
I mean,
his epic like leaving scene. I could cut you apart. That's just now, like carving a cake.
I just was distracted the whole time about his untimely ending in the show.
Oof. But and the lack of real heroic swordplay while he did it.
Right.
He looked a little dangerous standing in the alleyway, but it just didn't seem quite as effective as like the flourish that we ultimately wanted to see. And I forget the actor's name, my bad, but he also he's a big fan of the book series as well. And I think that he not so secretly also wanted a pretty beautiful, beautifully choreographed fight scene where he's
absolutely
old and kicking ass.
Yeah.
Have you ever seen the old Star Wars movies?
Mm-hmm.
Not like the old ones, but the ones from the 90s. Okay. There's a scene where, you know, Yoda, the character Yoda.
Yes.
Right. So
I got a little bit of
culturally relevant
for me.
Yoda,
yeah.
Which has made its way into your brain somehow. Yeah. You know Baby Yoda too?
Of course I do.
So we've seen old Yoda.
I know everything about Star Wars. I don't really need to see it.
Old Yoda. Baby Yoda. We haven't got Baby Barristan yet. That would be pretty cool.
We've got a pretty young Barristan in here though. And some of my favorite moments of this chapter were him reminiscing about his knighthood, like the night he was knighted and the food that he ate and how he can still recall so many of those details years and years later. So we get a little bit of young Barristan.
There is young Barry. We didn't get in one of those Star Wars movies. I think it was the second one of the prequels. There's this triumphant moment at the end where Yoda, who's already old, even in the prequels, is walking up with a cane. You've seen Yoda probably. He's really old and frail.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
Right.
I mean, I've never seen Star Wars, but I'm not living under a rock.
Sure.
Yeah.
He walks up and instead of drawing, he's about to fight, right?
Mm-hmm.
Instead of drawing his sword, like most people do, you know how like when they use the force, it's like telekinesis?
Yep.
He holds his hand out. And he unsheathes his lightsaber with the force. No one had done that. He's
nice.
Like, psh, right?
Yeah.
And then what happens is an epic fight scene. Like, he's little, but, like, fighting better than anyone. And you've been waiting, as a Star Wars fan, for decades for that to happen. Mm-hmm. You're like, oh, my God. And so that's kind of what we were waiting for with Barristan.
With the show?
A version of that. Yeah.
Welcome to our Star Wars podcast.
Yes.
One person's read it, one person's seen it, and the other person hasn't.
But, you know, the feeling that I get from reading this chapter and the other ones and Barry one from Wins is kind of like the same feeling, like a macrocosm of the microcosm of the moment when I knew he was coming back with Dany.
Mm-hmm.
It was like, can we get chapters like this in the future? Holy crap. So we've waited for A Dance with Dragons. The point of views have been split. Maybe some folks are unsatisfied. But it's kind of hard to be unsatisfied when you make it to a Barristan Selmy chapter. This guy, like, knows everything. He's been around, and within a lot of the stuff that he's reminiscing about are these small little hints that we can tear apart and think about for the next 20 years while we wait for the next book.
Totally. Totally. And I think that I feel like we were having a very similar conversation on one of the last episodes. I can't recall specifically. Somebody listening may be able to recall better than I can, but I love how Barristan is this character who we've spent quite a bit of time with, and he's been around the block, like you're saying. He's somebody who knows a lot. And we gain a little bit of information from him in this chapter, maybe more so his biases than anything else. But a lot of it is just him kind of dealing with the fallout of Daenerys leaving, and like his own guilty conscience almost of like, and his own biases of like, if I had maybe done things a little bit differently, maybe things would have turned out differently. I wasn't able to save Daenerys. I wasn't able to do anything about the Targaryen reign, you know, all these different kind of things. He's seen a lot, and he has quite a bit of a burden on his shoulders. And I thought it was interesting. We've spent so much time with Daenerys at the top of the pyramid, looking out over the city and thinking about, you know, the crushing weight of her rule and what she's supposed to be doing. And then she's gone, and now we get Barristan in the same exact place,
yeah,
having a lot of the same thoughts about what's going to happen next and what could he have done differently. And I thought that that was really cool to kind of get the looking out over the city from his perspective, somebody who's a veteran soldier, you know, who's wondering how he got there.
I liked the moment where I think it's a paragraph or two after George describes this guy as like a dead flesh color.
Yes. Yeah.
He's looking out at Meereen, and he's he looks outside and he sees the smoke rising from the Yunkish camp, and he starts to familiarize himself with, like, he's talking about the four lesser pyramids and neighborhoods and all the potential people that are decorated within certain areas. And I feel like the geography of Meereen and what's happening in Meereen is like this graphical representation physically that we're seeing, but also sort of metaphysically with the meaning that everyone's associated with their areas, even the smoke raising out of the toil outside of the city, of all these truths about the world that he's yet to really face.
Mm-hmm.
And he's ultimately this old guy at the top of the pyramid, and everything that he's looking back through his mind and playing through is true. But his perspective on how to be the knight that he said he would be has remained his like guiding light through all of it. And it's been the reason he hasn't drove himself mad or drove himself deep in depression. But as the reader and as George writing it for us, we can't help but to see what his life has ultimately fruited for him.
Yeah.
Standing and looking at the smoking ruin and the problem that he ultimately has to face. And the thing that he runs from, that he talks about running from, he talks about his past, his history with the different kings, with the reasons he rose up in the first place, the reason he started to get the legendary status that he had in the first place. He's running from playing the Game of Thrones every step of the way. He refuses to do it, but he has to now.
Yeah.
He's at the end of it.
Yeah.
He's so old that he may not be able to walk up the 800-foot pyramid, for Christ's sake.
Which is like an unbelievably large.
I don't want to do that now.
No.
I don't want to do it. But he's thinking about it, and he has no like kids to send forward as he's thinking about his old age. And so he starts to talk about the kids that he would leave behind to train and to ultimately take over his role with Daenerys. Mm-hmm. But Daenerys, like the kings before him, are still like that thing that's within him that he is able to sort of rely on as his North Star without driving himself crazy throughout this whole thing. And I don't know how I really feel about that personally. Does he really, really buy into it? Because he's really smart and he's been around for a long time and he's seen the ways that the game can go. And he's seen people that are too greedy and selfish get taken out early. He's also seen people that deserve to be taken out stay much longer. And he's also joined in on the public shaming of Jaime, who took care of the person that he thinks should have been taken care of in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
So he understands the subtlety among all of this, but yet he doesn't really act on it. He uses that rule, that like source code of who he is, as a way to, like I said, just say who he is without having to really make the decision for himself. And I don't know, I don't know if it's a good thing for him necessarily, but for the story and for Meereen specifically, I really like it because it adds this sort of, among all the leveraging that everyone's trying to do with Dany being gone, and Drogon having taken her away, so the one dragon is down,
and
also
killed all those people.
Everyone's trying to leverage in this chaos. He's got this weight of his, well, I know what's happening. I could play the game, and I kind of like know the game, but I can kind of pretend like I don't. And also, I can just lean heavily on the fact that I'm going to do what I said I would do. So even in his conversation with Scott has at the end, he's like, I'm going to tattle on you if you act without us making sure this is a thing. And that's the most budge I've ever seen him make. I mean, this is our first POV with him, but he's budged a little bit. So it's like that weight that I was talking about within him that I think is kind of bad for himself personally, but kind of good and interesting for the story is wavering. And so these next chapters with him that we're going to go through in Dance and Dragons is kind of like the justifying actions to change him in this old age, mm-hmm, or at right. least to, I don't know if it really changes him, but to spurn him forward to start acting in a way that he hasn't really done before.
And it may give him an opportunity in his mind to kind of redeem himself for not the mistakes, but you know, he's, as you've been saying, he's lived his life according to a specific code this whole time. And now he's faced with what could be argued as treason or, you know, going against who he is as somebody in the Queen's Guard or something. And so now not only is it like a question of political power and what's the right move for Daenerys's reign or for what Daenerys is trying to accomplish, but it's also an ego thing. Like, what's the right move for him as...
Yeah, it's like a sandbox that he can play in almost.
Yeah.
Because he's not in Westeros anymore, but he does care about the lives of his lads that he's training. And I think that he takes a shining to people like Grey Worm. Eventually.
And he cares deeply about Daenerys. Yeah, what does he call her? I was looking at the really... his bright, shining child queen.
Yeah.
I mean, that seems like a pretty sincere thing. And so...
Well, he's put on so much weight on her. That's kind of unfair for Daenerys when you think about it.
Mm-hmm. I was wondering, so, you know, we're kind of talking about him and his past and like his allegiances and things like that. This whole time I was thinking about the whole Fagon ordeal and kind of how somebody like Barristan is going to react to that potential wrinkle in Daenerys's plot as somebody who in this chapter is like so deeply regretful of what happened with Rhaegar and how he would have been this unbelievable king and things may have been different and it could have turned the Targaryen reign around, but instead, you know, things went a little bit differently. And so how he could potentially react hearing the news that like there is another one out there, you know what I mean? How that might change things for him or not at all, because he seems to be pretty loyal to Daenerys. But that's just kind of like another underlying question I had as I was reading through the chapter.
It'd be interesting to see him try to justify that in a POV chapter.
Right.
He's made the vow to Daenerys, but also this is Aegon.
Right.
And he actually mentions by word the baby Aegon
right.
in this chapter. So it's like probably would recall some sort of what's the word? Not like necessarily fatherly, but just how cute kids are and stuff. Like I bet he would make that up in his mind. Like, oh, it's so special. This kid is so alive. I saw him when he was just a babe. And,
right.
Oh my God, I can't believe he survived. And I know I'm sworn to Daenerys, but before he seemed like immovable.
Cause we didn't have his POV.
Exactly. <You know>? Exactly.
We were talking about this. Totally unrelated, but we were talking about earlier today about like J.K. Rowling was untouchable before she tweeted.
Right, exactly.
And now she like tweets, and so it's like, okay, we know who you are.
Yeah. It's like, please be mysterious.
Yeah.
Take your Twitter bio back to just the word author.
Right.
It was so douchey when you think about it, just to put that, but at the same time, it's so much more douchey now.
But now we get like with Barristan, you know, we'll maybe see some of his different balls here at the end.
Do you think if Barristan had a Twitter account that he would change his profile picture every week or so?
Absolutely not. I don't think he would know how is the reality.
You say that, but he's so aware of his outfits.
And he's also so
aware.
He's so deeply aware of just like everything that he's doing. So think about the beginning of the chapter when he is talking to his Dar and he refuses to call him his Magnificent.
Well, I think he's talking about his Dar.
Oh, he's talking about him. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
You're right. But he won't refer to him as his magnificence. He calls him.
Why would you?
His grace. You
right.
know, like it's on purpose, like in a way to kind of insult him a little bit. And it's kind of like, okay, I see your energy and like your bias and slight defiance here throughout this chapter rings pretty true.
Curmudgeonly.
So I just thought that was really funny.
Do you think that he would do that if he was younger, if that's an old man thing, or if it's a Westerosi prejudice thing?
probably a little bit of everything.
We talked about it before, but everyone is so comfortably prejudiced against the people in Marine. Even, I feel, people reading the books, even George, you know what I mean? Just the way he talks about old Gis and the way he talks about what people are up to, eating dogs and stuff in Marine.
Well, especially, I mean, if you look at just Daenerys's experiences here, I mean, she hasn't really necessarily done her best to try to assimilate into these cultures that she's trying to assert her dominance over.
The Togar? You didn't think that was enough?
But it's interesting because, and even like questions that my own biases and questions that I have as I'm reading this chapter is a lot of the conflict of this chapter is kind of talking about who attempted to poison Daenerys with those, were they honey locusts? Yeah. And just the question of, was it his Dar? Was it Shave Pate? Was it somebody else kind of thing? And how me thinking, well, Daenerys doesn't have any of her people. Like, who does Daenerys trust that's, like, not some of her OG people? And it's like, well, that's probably not necessarily the best POV to come from. But because you look at somebody like the Shave Pate, who is not from Westeros, like, who is from more of, like, a local energy. And so it's like my initial reaction of, well, why do we trust the Shave Pate? Right. We don't know anything about him kind of thing, when seemingly he's been pretty loyal to Daenerys for survival necessities along the way. But
so convenient for him to reject the hairstyle of Old Gis and take off the hair and join the ranks of Daenerys and to climb so swiftly.
Yeah, lucky him.
What do you think?
Instead of getting murdered.
First off, part one of the question. Do you think that his Dar is pretty awesome for having a royal confectioner?
You know Most importantly. I mean,
That is cool.
It is pretty cool.
He's like one of those people that work at Disneyland that hand make those, they like once a year, I saw a video on it recently, like Guy Fieri, like old Guy Fieri Triple D episode. It was like a holiday special at Disneyland. These guys making candy canes by hand. Mm-hmm. That's the guy. Mm-hmm. That's the guy's daughter that they took.
Right.
That just, he's spent his whole life getting really good at making candy so much that he's the confectioner for a guy that presides over 800-foot pyramid. We're going to take his daughter away for all this? Man. These people are savage, or the story wasn't true. What do you think? Do you think Shave Pate is on our side? / do you think he had anything to do with the poisoning? / do you think he secretly wants his own royal confectioner?
To the last point, absolutely yes. Makes sense. It's hard for me to say. You look at somebody like Hisdar, who we're already really kind of, we don't have a lot of warm feelings towards him necessarily.
We're so suspicious from day
from
one.
From day one, we from the are. Moment when he's coming and again
George is
and again,
it.
Again. Yeah.
It's about not like we're accidentally suspicious.
Right,
it
exactly.
It seems suspicious.
So that's what makes me think, like, take a step back and be like, well, we're so obviously being pointed down the direction of this is all his Dar's fault. You know, Daenerys has been gone for like 5 seconds and he's already kind of taking things over, whether it's for his own survival. I mean, he seems to be pretty afraid of his own city and kind of all these things that are happening.
He's trying to get one of his cousins to run the Unsullied.
Right. I mean, to me, that's probably like the shadiest thing of all the things that he does in the wake of Daenerys leaving.
It just seems like a stretch. The Brazen Beast, taking the Brazen Beasts away from the Shave Pate makes more sense.
Right.
I think of that like a Ned City Watch Littlefinger sort of situation without all the treachery, just straight up. He was probably across the board, just like, this is what's going to happen. These guys are basically the royal
taking
guards.
Taking control.
Yeah, exactly. I don't know why I interrupted you. I'm sorry, but it was suspicious. Some of it was, but some of it also wasn't.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. And that's what I was saying. And so, you know, I think we're meant to be suspicious of what his Dar is doing because we already don't like him. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, you know, he's just like a guy who is just doing his best to kind of take hold of the political power that he's been given and to kind of protect his family and protect his position of power. And so, you know, I don't know. Like I said, I think we're kind of being meant to be suspicious of Hisdar. So that's why it's kind of interesting to look around and see other potential options. Shave Pate seems to be kind of coming in here and stirring up trouble a little bit. And I think that Shave Pate is a person who has been really loyal to Daenerys and whose like life has depended on that. And so we haven't really had any reason to question that so far. But at this point, nobody is really, there's a lot of chaos going on. And so nobody is really clearly the quote unquote bad guy. And so as Barristan kind of moves, you think about the, where the story is going for Barristan as we're moving into battle, as we kind of talked about in the Winds of Winter sample chapters that we did a couple months ago.
That was last year, by the way. I think like a year from now, basically. Crazy.
Wow. He is eventually, you know, like taking over what's happening in the city, and they decide to move against Hisdar. And so whether that is the right decision or not, whether any of that even really matters, you know, it's all just finally stuff is moving and finally the wheel is quickly turning and our time here is very speedily coming to an end. And so what was I saying? Why Hisdar. Did I say all of that?
Hisdar, I said, Ska, Shepe, yeah. Talking about whether
basically
or not
saying all what? Of that to say, I'll summarize what I just all over the place is saying. A, probably Hisdar is somebody that we're being pointed to very directly. So it's like, well, maybe we should be suspicious of that. B, who are other players that we could think about that might also be in the mix looking for political gain? And C, does it even really matter? Because the plot has already been put into motion. And by the time, like, are we going to be around long enough to really get the answer to this? Or is this, you know, just another piece of let's get the heck out of here and move forward? So
that's the beautiful part in the literature, as far as the plot already being put into motion with all of the geographical descriptions and just knowing that we're in a story, but he puts the supporting evidence there in the chapters. There's all this scale happening around us and these people are just ants in the greater game. Mm-hmm. But it's cool to get like a zoom in on their personality and try to understand before they make their decisions what kind of decision they're going to make. But they're ultimately all, even whoever's responsible for the poisoning and stuff, swept up in this tumultuous situation in Slaver's Bay, one that even Volantis wants to join in on. I think it's really easy not to trust Hisdar because he doesn't talk to anyone inside of the city seemingly that we're friends with. Like, he's making some kind of a deal with Volantis, it seems, and we're bringing a whole new tribe of people in with all of their Valentine slaves that are local that have been freed that are probably not going to be unfreed at that point. And so obviously we feel like he's circumventing everything that Dany put into place immediately,
right?
Which seems just suspect. But at the same time, you've got this guy Shapepate who is so passionate about what's happening. I wonder, why wouldn't he just leave? Like, why wouldn't someone just leave if you got – it's probably the same thing. Like, I haven't left New York even though I'm in the middle of COVID. I was about to say, like the pale mayor is riding outside and inside the
literally
city.
Literally, COVID is happening there.
Worse.
They were talking
so
about –
so much worse.
I know, but it was so funny because there was a quote in the beginning that was like, the markets were closed, the streets were empty, crowds were sparse, things like that. And I was like, ah, that's all too familiar to us these days.
Except the sparse crowds. Crowds are still pretty strong these days.
Well, at, now in the summertime, yes, but a few months ago, it wasn't the case.
But there at the beginning of it, yeah, people took it really seriously. Mm-hmm. I forget what I was saying.
You were just talking about Shapepate and why he's staying.
Yeah, why doesn't he just leave? Mm-hmm. Unless he's got more of a plan there. I know that he was given, when he turned down the role of being basically the sewer person in Hisdar's plan after he got, not disbarred, but he just basically got replaced from leading the Brazen Beast. He's like, no, I'm just going to chill in this pyramid that I was, the Khandak pyramid. So he's comfortable. He's got a pyramid, which is, I mean, we often talk about the scale of the story. And this is a great reference analogy here. It would be thinking about the way the Iron Throne is depicted in the show and in their art versus what it really was described like. And in a lot of the depictions that George will retweet himself. That's kind of like, think about what a normal town or a normal city, stony city like Meereen looks like, and then just make it crazy, high fantasy crazy. So yeah, he probably doesn't want to leave that, and it probably feels pretty safe there being him, even though all that stuff's happening in the city. But at the same time, remember when he was like, the beasts are still mine?
Mm-hmm.
What if the Brazen Beasts are the Sons of the Harpy?
Okay.
And what if he's one of the leaders of the Sons of the Harpy? And what if his whole thing is basically disrupting,
and so,
destabilizing everything?
Do you think him trying to get Barristan and company, like the Unsullied and stuff, on his side kind of continue to create some of that chaos? Like, what's his end game?
Well, like I said, like, why didn't Hisdar do that in a nice way? Or at least in a way that made Barry or someone else want to really join his side instead of, like, looking outward? It seems like this guy could be looking inward. And he probably has less ego and a little bit more ambition, mm-hmm. probably less to lose, too, than Hisdar. So he's just going to go tell Barry what he wants to hear. Whereas Hisdar is like, I'm king. I'm going to talk to Volantis. I don't, right. I'm going to command that the Unsullied change their leader so then I can control them.
Right.
Instead of getting Grey Worm on my side, instead of working within the walls and getting these people to work with us, he's letting the scale of the majesty of his position, his magnificence, his illustriousness, as we're reminded by Resnick to call him. You know, all these little hints and indicators that someone who's so up-jumped, it's a bit ridiculous at a time like this to be taking so seriously the post of your command when there's nothing but destabilization happening all around you. Might be the kind of guy to look toward that, the highbrow governing approach rather than the brass tacks sort of a guerrilla warfare sort of tactic that it seems like Shafepate is doing. Mm-hmm. So why wouldn't Shafepate also be the guy to do that with the Sons of the Harpies? Mm-hmm. Like, why would Hisdar not think to do more of a localized approach to stuff if he is the guy, or if he's one of the guys in the Sons of the Harpy, or if he's aware of it? Why wouldn't he then take that same sensibility to handle the situation now? So I'm curious. I don't feel like I trust Shafepate, even though, like I told you earlier, before we started recording, I've always liked him mm-hmm. for some reason.
Yeah, you did say that.
He seemed like way more agreeable, and maybe that's a bad sign. I've had bad luck with that as well.
Yeah.
But he seemed like way more agreeable and like in the squad already than the rest of them. They all seemed so hesitant to sort of transition over to this new way of life. And I know that he had personal reasons to really be associated with Danny, but I don't know. Just seems kind of too good to be true almost. I like his tenacity, but I think it might be misplaced mm-hmm. or at least like on purposely misplaced.
Right. Well, and we're definitely in a situation right now where we are absolutely going to be more mistrustful of anybody, especially somebody like Barrison, who we're reading this through his eyes. I mean, it's his job to not be trusting of anyone and anything, you know, in his attempt to be a better protector and maybe rewrite some of the wrongs that he feels like he committed when he was younger. And so the thing that I think is interesting is Shafepate really demands that they act immediately. Like, there's no time to really waste. This is something that they need to strike now, and they need to handle the situation ASAP. And so, you know,
he's definitely the bad guy.
I don't know. I mean, I don't know for sure, but I mean, that sense of urgency, there is a lot happening and unfolding. And we think about Volantis, like you're saying, kind of OMW for Hisdar. This is a time when they're in peace, quote unquote. And so hopefully he makes some comment. What is that thing? He makes some comment about Hisdar's peace has lulled us to sleep, they believe.
Yeah.
And so, you know, this
you is. You mean Danny's peace?
Yeah.
The peace that right. Danny brokered.
Right. That's already like everyone already forgot that. But he's just very like, for good reason, there's like a deep sense of urgency, but that's another piece of like, well, maybe we should be thinking twice about what the Shafepate is trying to do, just because he's trying to make things happen really quickly.
Or he really believes that they have a chance to circumvent this whole thing mm-hmm. if they defeat the Yunkish horde outside and maybe even the sickness before Volantis gets there.
Those are two so deeply troubling and large tall orders mm-hmm. to ask, and they're severely outnumbered. I mean, mm-hmm. they've got quite a few folks on their side, and you think about like the Unsullied being on their side, talk about powerhouses to kind of be able to back you up, but their numbers are just so much less than what the other side has control over. And mm-hmm. so it feels like an underdog type of situation.
But we get that window into what the forces are like outside from his conversation with the Shafepate, mm-hmm. and they're they're not doing good. There's like disorder.
Well, nobody's doing good. Yeah.
Right. But it's like, doesn't it seem worse outside of, I don't know, maybe it just is, maybe it's just as bad with his daughter being in charge and the Queen's man not trusting the king and there not being like real order. But I feel like at the same time, Barristan ultimately has shown that we can kind of count on him to just, instead of doing the hard thing, to just lean back on his vow. And so if shit was going down, I feel like he'd fight for his dar if he had to.
I don't, but that's what he's grappling with here at the end, is that he didn't make a vow to his dar.
But it's because he's been given another option, I think.
Yeah.
Another thing to do. So if it came to blows with the people outside based on like him not acting, it'd be like the laziest version of being Barristan. And yeah. So I think maybe he's trying to, like you said, right some of those wrongs by being not as lazy here. And it just so happens that he's in a place where he already kind of disrespects the people. So it's like he's more comfortable to do it.
Yeah, he already kind of doesn't really vibe with everything that's going on.
So he's like, you know, it's fine. I'm 70. I'm at the end of all this. I might actually play my hand, but not really say to himself truthfully what he's doing. But it's fine. To be someone that's so serious, and this is a big takeaway, I think. Because I think people of all ages are reading these books. And I know as I've gotten older that I've sort of realized how when I was younger, I thought that older people were smarter and more put together and more sure. But this guy's 70 and he's one of the most legendary humans in the story. And it's kind of easy to be like, dude, you should do it like this. And if we can say that about him, holy crap. We're all in the, it's like we're at a state of chaos almost, you know, it's like this vibrating state of chaos and we can only like really rely on what actually happens and what's actually going to happen here. Like I said, it seems like, and we know for sure that Barristan's going to move forward and try to navigate his way through this Mirny's knot and become the guy, become the Queen's hand, like unofficially, then officially. Which is really satisfying to see, and I'm really looking forward to getting into those chapters. But we still don't have answers about some of the mysteries in here.
And we might not ever get answers to some of the mysteries.
Man, that would be disappointing.
I don't know. To me, that's the same, like, question. It's like whenever people talk about Lost, they're like, but what about the polar bears?
But they talked about that. Did you not watch the addendum to that?
No, that's not, but I'm, right.
Let's get into Lost really quick. Do you remember that? The clip they released after the show?
Right, but I'm saying, like, during the show, while the show was airing.
Yeah.
And near the end, like, the very end. It was like, well, we're, like, dealing with something that's so far removed from the polar bears at this point. Like, why are you still harping on these things that like were just catalysts to the story?
What if we did a novella in Marine after this? Like whether or not this would be perfect.
So
hold on. It's after the White Walkers win, right? But like we only see their victory in Westeros. Mm-hmm. We just assume there's like a really dark last paragraph where George is describing the weather in a way that's terrible. Donald Trump has just been elected for his fourth term. Something like that in real life.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's reflected in the story. The White Walkers win. It's horrible. And the novella that we get, if the Earth survives a couple more years, is in Marine. But like, it's, say it's Shave Pate, and he's, you know, reminiscing about the things that he did. I don't know why I'm picking on him so bad this episode.
Yeah, I thought you liked him.
But he did bad stuff, right? And then the White Walkers come in Marine. And that's the novella.
Okay.
No?
I mean, sure. I'm done with Marine, like, personally. So I think we can, you know, get a little move on. Once we leave Marine, it's like, we spent enough time here. No
Do you
disrespect.
Think that Barry's going to make it out alive?
I don't know. I think that's a good question. And this is another one of those things where they didn't, like you're saying at the beginning of the episode, they did him so dirty in the show that it's just kind of, I mean, it's obvious from where we see in the books that things play out a little bit differently for him. But I think that's Barristan going down in some really heroic way would be pretty satisfying, you know.
It better be heroic though, because I don't really believe in any of the stuff that's happening.
I know. But you look at him and somebody who, what he says, as he's kind of reminiscing, he's thinking of all these different knights and
mm-hmm.
different kings he served under and kind of what it is to be the kind of man that he is. And it's like the best of them overcame their flaws, did their duty, and died with their swords in their hands. The worst were those who played the Game of Thrones. I mean, so maybe this is like foreshadowing of him not dying with a sword in his hand because he's being
oh my
a
God,
protector, but
so
is
dark.
Instead dying in some smaller way, because he does decide basically by the end of the chapter that he's going to start participating.
Man, can you imagine getting to the end of it, having survived so long?
Well, especially as we see...
getting punished for
especially
playing.
Depending on how like the battle turns out and Daenerys' return and all of that. You know, I think that's going to be pretty...
Please just give me Barristan and Vic, you know, angrily or non-angrily being on the same team. Yeah, meanwhile, he's anchored outside of Slaver's Bay right now, just waiting to come in with the Red
Priest. That's what I'm saying. Is it just thrilling? It's
so
just very exciting. Marine. Yeah, but that's like, so is everybody else on planet Earth.
Right, but what's more exciting than what's happening in Marine and the
because
Winds of Winter?
Because stuff is happening in Marine. You know what I mean? Because we're finally getting to this point where we're unraveling this classic Myrinese knot, mm-hmm. and we're finally kind of making movement and things are actually going somewhere and people are converging and stuff's clashing. Mm-hmm. You know, it's less theoretical and more in person, like actually coming to fruition. And so to me, that's just really exciting. And so
that's the way I felt about the end of this chapter. Whenever he met with the Shaypate, I felt like it was really exciting. I liked that sort of mobility and I liked the importance of his words. And you were talking about time. We need to act now. I like the importance of time. And I like their odds based on what he said about how disorganized everything is. And we're going to get that perspective from Tyrion. It's so dark. I remember when I read it for the first time, thinking about it was just like a nasty, sick, like vomit filled and just really like amorphous, fat, blubbery, deserty, not a good combo of stuff. Also, Jorah's in the midst of it. He's like been beaten so bad. He's pulpy. People have worn wrists and ankles from the manacles that they wear. It sucks. To get out of the boat and the slaver's situation with Tyrion and then to be outside of Marine like this, mm-hmm. people don't like it. I don't think people like reading it. I think they like Tyrion in King's Landing with all this beautiful towers and people that he can make remarks to.
Right, and not like quip at.
Yeah, yeah, not his depressed, like, you know, Penny, I don't know.
I don't know. I think, I mean, from my perspective, I love
you like
that
it?
Perspective from Tyrion. Yeah, absolutely.
So you like the weird depression funk that he's like,
I mean,
I don't
like it, but I think it's interesting.
Well, I'm not asking if you support it necessarily, but you enjoy reading it versus like the structure that he had before.
For sure.
Really?
He's so much more likable now.
Really?
Wouldn't you say?
I don't know. I'm not very smart. I have the title of this podcast came from basically Tyrion having an early like streak of just zingers on people, slapping Joffrey and stuff. I'm kind of shallow. I'm like, oh yeah, this is totally how it's always going to be. Or at least I was then, probably like slightly improved. So I'm sort of missing those moments, I guess, from Tyrion is what I'm saying.
That's fair. But I think we have got, I would hope to think that we've got many more of those to come. That things won't be too serious, that we can't continue to have those, you know, eventually as things start moving in a different direction.
There was also something about this chapter that rubbed me in kind of a weird way, where I try to vocalize the way that the pace of stuff feels. I think I talked about it in the last Danny chapter.
Oh, yeah, actually. I remember. Yeah. Well, I don't remember specifically what you said, but I remember you talking about being unsatisfied with the pacing.
And I don't know what else he would do, but, you know, we have all these POVs, and I know that we can't dill-dally too much. Maybe hawking with Sansa was like a little bit too much dill-dallying. I don't know. I'm sure there was, I can't remember specifically. I know there was stuff with Margaery, but there was things to be discovered about truths between royals and like who your friends really are and like how they treat the girls that hang out with them that aren't like, for example, Margaery's friends are her best friends. They've actually been hanging out with her for like her whole life, but I'm going to treat you, Sansa, better than them, even though I just met you because you're this lordly, you know, a lordling's daughter. Learning that kind of stuff, I feel like maybe it wasn't a waste, but maybe it's taken to an extreme almost when the last thing that we saw of this storyline was Dany flying away. And now when we enter it, I forget the specifics. I guess I could read it, but the gist is all of Dany's chips have, all of her dominoes have fallen in a bad way. Like they've I think when Domino's fall, it's supposed to be on like as designed, but it went backwards or something. Dario's captured. Basically, all of her people are misplaced and unhappy and taken out of positions of power so quickly. I feel like there wasn't a lot of transition time, and there wasn't a lot of time to sort of like feel where we were.
You're not satisfied with where we are, Marie. Like, we spent 500 hours there.
I think that people feel inside of them a little bit disappointed with the scale of the story. Whenever they read the next chapter and everything like clockwork has already fallen into place. Mm. It's kind of like the feeling at the end of the series, for lack of a better comparison, where all the stuff has sort of inexplicably fallen perfectly in place for this part of the story to be discussed. And it's like clockwork. It's like, well, of course Hisdar has done this and taken over, and now Dario's captured and all these people have fallen out. We didn't really see it happen though. We just like here, we get an info dump of it, and then now we're doing this. It just feels like, and that was the like kind of like the beginning of Dany's chapter, her last chapter, and then, or I guess it was the one before, because we put her last two together, and then she flew away. It was just like, okay, here's all the details, but now we're walking to the gate. So it's like, oh, so this is the thing you wanted to put in the chapter, huh? But there's all this other info. It just feels so conveniently put into place. It's like fast travel, sort of. Like, it almost feels unearned. I don't know what the alternative is. I'm not an author. I don't know what you should do. I'm sure that this is probably the best that he could come up with, and it might even be the best that you could do. I just feel like there's a little bit of disappointment, because I feel like I know what's going to happen. I expect it all like this. And so I'm feel mystery about who did what. But I already know sort of what's going to happen.
That's interesting to me, because two things to kind of say to that. The first is, for me, all of that stuff happening, quote unquote, off screen, off page, lends itself to a little bit more of a mystery of what is actually, like, the things that look like the conversations and the things that are actually going on, like, adds a little bit more to the chaos, because we don't really understand the types of conversations that Hisdar is having, or we don't really understand all of the pieces that kind of led to Barristan's day today. Whereas before, we were with Daenerys, like, in deep, excruciating detail of like every second of her day, because there was nothing really going on.
Like at the beginning, of dance,
You know, and so it's a little bit jarring, because now we're left out of conversations and out of details, and so to me, that kind of adds to this layer of, well, who do we trust, and who are we supposed to be looking to, and who is behind all of these different things that are happening? What was my second point that I was going to say? I can't remember right now. It'll maybe come back to me, but that's my read on it. Oh, and the second of, like, well, we already know what's going to happen. I mean, I can't, like, get inside your head, so I don't know exactly how you come to those conclusions and things like that, but I think it's also difficult from at this point in the book series, knowing what we know from the show and knowing enough of what we know about the book series, it's obvious that Daenerys is going to come out the other side of whatever ends up happening here. And
in some way,
I also think it's easy for me as a reader to dismiss a lot of the stuff that could potentially come out of the end of the Marine portion, because it's like, well, Barristan, you know, because he wasn't important in the show, he's not going to be important at the end of the book series. Or, like, you look at Tyrion, he's going to link up with Daenerys, blah, 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 whatever, and then we'll get to some of the drama back in King's Landing. You know what I mean? And so I think it's, like, kind of easy to dismiss or to assume things because we think that we know how everything is going to go, which might not necessarily be the case.
I don't think it is with me, because I put way too much emotional weight on just the reality of the situation. I get a little bit too romantic about it. I'm like, ooh, a Barristan chapter. I can't believe it. I'm like texting my friends, like, can we get more Barry chapters? Oh my God, what do you guys think about Selmy? I feel like I'm the target audience to have time wasted on me or not when it comes to this stuff.
Right, for sure.
So I try to go into these chapters not being too annoyed, but I'm reading it and I'm just like, okay, so all this, it just seems like, it's the kind of writing, I need someone smarter than me to talk about this. Like, the kind of writing where the author clearly tells you, it's like putting an adverb And after dialogue, where it's like, blah, 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 said sharply.
Mm-hmm.
Da, 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 it's apparently something amongst authors to try to remove as much of those as possible, because you're supposed to have all this real foundation. Like, if you're good enough, what you're writing is representing the story as it is. You don't have to go in and put in all of these sort of qualifiers to keep like nudging you. Like, he said it sharply because he's upset. You're mm-hmm. supposed to kind of know that he's upset.
Yeah.
It's kind of like a version of that for me, where I'm just like, all right, so I'm supposed to think this way because all this stuff has happened. Rather than showing me, I'm getting it told to me. And so then I'm understanding.
It's just like exposition.
Yeah, but it's in his brain, and then he's reacting to it, which is cool. I believe me, I want to see Barry reacting to anything after all this time. Like, bring it on. This is a pretty big moment. We've got a Barristan Selmy point of view. And I know personally for me, like the last decade or so of my life, maybe a little bit more, he's been one of my idols as far as the way people fight and survive and intimidate each other in Westeros. He's been one of the guys to look to. And so now we have his chapter.
Now we get his opinions and things like that.
Exactly. So it's cool to get his opinion after all the stuff is done. I just feel like in a book like A Dance of Dragons, there's already so much stuff. And in chapters like Dany's chapters and Meereen, there's all these names. Skahaz.
They all sound the same.
Is named after, I'm assuming, the Skahazadon, which is the river mm-hmm. that Dany flew north over. Resnek, more Resnek. All the different graces. Your grace.
Mm-hmm.
Blue grace, green grace, red grace. There's already so much of that sort of proliferation of things that make you go, you kind of, I'm going to read this paragraph fast. I don't do that. Of course not me. But you know, when you find yourself doing that, right? It's like that sort of, we're already sort of there after the process throughout the whole book. And to add insult to injury, you're going to tell me what's happening? Show me what's happening.
That's fair. Like I said, I understand where you're coming from on that. I just read it a little bit differently than you.
I think that the way that you put it's a lot, probably the way that George wanted it to be taken by people. And like I said, I think there's no other really, I can't think of any other way that should be done. I can't offer up another thing, but I know that it's a thing amongst people they talk about the Meereen's Knot and they kind of go, I don't know if that's going to matter or be a thing. People don't really put a lot of stock in remembering details. Even people that I know love A Song of Ice and Fire and make costumes and stuff. It's just like, And I think it's mostly because of the way that you feel while reading it, or at least feel while leading up to it and stuff. It can't be all these people share a flaw of like, we just can't pay attention to things. That's not really the case. I don't really think that that's really the case. I think that maybe it just kind of is a little, I don't know, weird at the end, or sort of gets to feel that way. But I like what you said about the sort of micromolar process through Daenerys's point of view. You know, a lot of sitting around on the pyramid and looking over and thinking. And then now there's like a lot of action, seemingly. That's pretty cool.
Mm-hmm. It's exciting, like I said. It's exciting, and tension continues to build. And Barristan is about to be thrust forth into a lot of big decisions. And so I feel like we got a lot of setup just for a lot of the stuff that's to come.
Who do you think poisoned Dany?
I decided that I'm in the camp of I don't know if we're ever going to necessarily find out, because I think that things are going to, as you've been saying, move so quickly that is going to potentially be something that's left unresolved.
Really good non-answer.
I love giving non-answers.
Who doesn't? His star's like, you should try the honey locust. They're delicious.
But he doesn't four eat times. One. Yeah. I'm like, okay.
Another question. So Resnek Mor Resnek, who's looking like his is number two right now in mm-hmm. some way. Do you think, he's literally described in this chapter as a perfume seneschal.
Yeah.
You know, Quaithe's right. Morning, right. Beware the perfume seneschal. Right. Do you think that he's the perfume seneschal?
I mean, what's he going to do? Is Daenerys' attempted poisoning supposed to be that prophecy?
I don't know.
And so is he like involved in that?
Beware. I don't know. It seems like that would be a disappointing way to express that. Like, oh yeah, it's happened already and she already avoided it. You know, like she didn't need it. Yay.
Yeah. I guess.
I think I'm saying no to that based simply on that fact alone.
But what else is there that they could
do.
Yeah.
To mess her deal. I mean, I don't know. Whenever she gets back, maybe we'll find out. But he's literally called the perfume mm-hmm. seneschal. So it's just not often we get a prophecy with such straight up words. And
right.
then it literally be, it's some meta. There's some meta narrative writing in there that George is doing. So it's either to me, like a big misdirection, or it's another layer of misdirection where he might actually be the one.
But then, and then Barrison makes a comment about how real men sweat,
yeah.
basically.
Yeah.
It's like, okay.
Exactly. You're so we're bringing
man.
More. Well, yeah. Like, come on, Barry.
Like, it just goes back to him being so, like, he doesn't like anything.
Judgmental.
Yeah, he just hates on everything in Marine 24/7. Yeah. Like, he doesn't give anybody a chance mm-hmm. or anything a chance. Mm-hmm. It's just like.
Like okay. I said, though, or like I asked earlier, do you think it is his being an old man thing, or do you think it's him being Barristan thing?
I think it's him being a Barristan thing.
Hmm.
Yeah. But I agree with what you said. I agree that, like, that's the perfume seneschal thing. I mean, that's, like, a pretty heavy-handed.
The glass candles are burning. What were you going to say?
Well, I was going to say, I guess it depends on kind of, and we might not remember, you might not also might not remember exactly this, but is Hisdar, Barristan confronts him about putting him in prison, basically. Mm-hmm. Is he in prison? Or is that just, like, we're moving towards that, you know? So maybe there's something about him being captured and then...
There's probably a mention of that at the beginning of the T-Wow chapter, but I can't remember.
Oh, I'm sure there is. People listening will remember, and you guys can tweet at us or just, like, yell it into the void. But I can't remember exactly if he is
weird
on his
move.
Way to be jailed or if he is currently jailed. You know what I mean? I don't
yeah.
think it necessarily matters, but just thinking about whatever his name is, if that could potentially be his role.
Oh, are we talking about Redneck?
Yeah.
Like letting him out?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Like maybe that's like the perfume central. Like he's got like something.
If she comes back with Drogon, maybe a Khalsar, who knows, while they're maybe still finishing the fight, or let's say the fight's over or whatever, and they win, and then the whole plot with whatever Redneck and his are doing, it's like they got through all the hard stuff. And these dudes are back at it again. Mm-hmm. Oh, that'd be so unsatisfying.
Well, because it's like, what do we do? Ugh. Like, let's just get out of here.
Right, exactly.
You know?
Right. That might be the reason. Let's just burn it all to the ground. You know what? Let's burn this mother to the ground. You know what? Let's just do it.
Yeah.
Oh, speaking of, 214 people died at the end of that last chapter.
That's a pretty big number.
Oh, especially for the freer of slaves, mm-hmm. breaker of chains, to for all those people to die in her escape.
I
Holy shit.
I don't think Daenerys did that on purpose.
Oh, of course not. Well, yeah. Maybe of course not. I don't know.
No, I don't think so. To me, it didn't read like she did it on purpose.
Right.
Along those lines, though, so this, I don't know, this is probably going to be my own, though, so maybe I shouldn't mention it, but, there's this part in the chapter that made me...
I've gone temporarily deaf and have no idea what you're saying.
There's this part in the chapter that made me LOL. And so Drogon, like, burns all these people. And then, so they're talking about, well, when Drogon returns, how do they prepare? And there's talk of shooting him down when he returns, like, in the sky.
Yeah, all the
and
scorpions
Barrison's
around.
And like, uh-huh. He's like, it's no simple thing to slay a dragon in the sky. In Westeros, many tried to bring down Aegon and his sisters. None succeeded. And so I was just thinking about that huge, like, arrow that we had in the show. And it just made me laugh out loud. Like, in the book, it's like, and maybe, you know, there is something like that that will be used, and it'll be like the first time something like that's ever happened, but in the show it just seems almost cartoonish at this
look
point.
Look at my big dick.
Yeah.
I'm gonna fuck that dragon right out of the sky.
Yeah.
It kind of sucks that Bronn's dick wasn't big enough to take down the dragon.
Right, right.
But Euron's definitely was.
That just made me laugh, so.
It is funny.
We'll see, but, you know, they're just, like, trying to fix this Drogon problem. And
it's cute. It might work, but 214 people on accident, I don't know if a scorpion's going to take down that dude. I like Barry's dream about Dany with having, like, flaming hair. And mm-hmm. she was, instead of being like, whoa, freaked out, she was, like, in savage command, striking the dragon.
Right.
And I like the age gap because he wasn't, like, sexualizing her at the same time. Which, you know, I feel like who wouldn't? So it was, you know, a nice, like, raw image of her, a little bit separated from that stuff. I feel like Jorah, even if we had a Jorah point of view and he's, like, seeing her in the fire, he'd still be like, oh, my God, look at the shape of her ass or whatever.
Yeah, but even still, Barrison's like, well, I bet that Dario would have maybe done a better job than me. Like, maybe Dario would have done. So I wonder if there's like a little bit. How he feels about Daenerys is like, it's not in the same camp as somebody like, vying for her attention. Old. But it's like, he's like, can't help but compare himself to Dario. He's like, well, he probably could have run faster than I did. Or I wonder how things might have been different if Dario had been here and it hadn't been me who's
dark, but kind of true, Barry.
Yeah, dark but true.
Do you think that that is a what happened with those people, a kind of brutal foreshadowing to the collateral damage that she's going to inflict with those drags?
Well, because look, there's 214 that were killed, and then it was like three or four times that amount were wounded or burned.
Jesus.
And so, you know.
And that was so, that was nothing. But there was a lot of people in one place, though, oddly enough.
Right, but we'll get to this in a couple of chapters. But I mean, at the end of this whole thing is, the other two dragons are loose, you know, and so talk about chaos.
Yeah, I wonder what they do as far as the killings.
Yeah, whether accidental or on purpose. But I mean, that's the only reason why Daenerys stands any sort of chance. It's because she's the one with the dragons. And Fagon says that, they talk about that all the time. It's like, you got the name, but you don't got dragons, so.
And Quaithe isn't visiting you in your dreams, right, or your sleep.
Exactly.
Or when you're tripping out in the desert. So,
so what do you got going
really
for
the
you?
Hero of this story?
Right. Right.
Gosh, that stuff is so crazy. I was going to read a Quaithe quote, the one about the perfumes in his soul.
Let's
just read this for everyone. The glass candles are burning. Soon comes the pale mare, and after her, the others. Kraken, just tell her. I guess she is kind of telling her, though. Kraken and dark flame. Lion and Griffin.
The Griffin reborn.
Hannah's like holding her, like shaking her hand in front of me, like, go on, go on.
No, like,
because expectedly she says everything. She kind of spells it out.
Right.
Kraken and dark flame, lion and Griffin, the sun. Oh, come on. And the mummer's dragon. Trust none of them. And also, remember the undying. Beware the perfumed Shinistral. I wonder what Barristan thinks about Quaithe. Like, if he was able to read the book, I want his point of view on it. Not
you want
my
Barristan's POV of him reading the POVs?
Yeah, or if him, I want Barristan's POV of reading Danny POVs, and I want someone that's not as impressed about her own grandiosity listening to this person that is a human person living in this world, might be able to do magic, but it's just another person, telling her all this ridiculously mysterious stuff.
Sounds like some good fan fiction.
Exactly. So where are you from? She's from Ashai. Okay. What? Maybe she can't get too involved. It's weird.
It's absolutely weird. That's why, I mean, that's also why Daenerys, there is all of this just like grandiosity surrounding her and her trajectory, you know, and so you can't help but put weight into that, even without looking at the specifics necessarily. It's just like there's so much mystery surrounding her whole journey to get where she is today. So people like Quaithe and all these different players that are kind of circling around her as she's making her moves,
like sneaking into her bedroom.
Yeah, you know. So
what does she know that we don't know? Probably everything. Or at least enough to, like, it's same place Melisandre's from. So maybe she's better at doing it than Melisandre. Could be like a 1,200-year-old person, just sort of flitting in and out. Can you imagine, like, how many times when you drive in and out of a major city or something, eventually you're like, you know, I kind of like know this is, before this was this unknown, untraversable, I'm looking at my GPS constantly, place. And now I kind of have the spatial awareness to sort of know where I am. Someone as old as Melisandre, or maybe Quaithe, or however else people are staying alive, whether with magical necklaces or really good genes or whatever technology they're dealing with over there, they probably know the ins and outs of Essos and Westeros. Like, ins and
every
outs.
Every corner. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I wonder how people like that are going to mix with the top brass from places like the people inside the Maester's Order and people from Braavos inside of the House of Black and White. Like, how they all relate. I feel like there's some kind of metaphysical relation. Not metaphysical, but, like, some kind of a high-level game connection between people like them, Bryn Rivers, Euron Greyjoy.
Like, they're tapping into this other thing. that's going on.
Yeah. If it's not a literal tapping into, it's like they're smarter than everyone else and they're really pulling back and letting the squabbly stuff sort of play its way out because they're aware of this sort of deeper presence of maybe technology or magic,
some which like is
kind of be a technology, I guess, in the world. Because it seems like there's people in the know, and then there's people that are just, you know, dealing with stuff as it goes.
Right.
It's kind of sad to see Barristan as one of those people because he has been around for so long, but he's not really in the know. He's like in the middle of this.
Yeah, but I think that's what makes him such a hashtag relatable. That's why getting a POV from him to me is really cool because we get this opportunity to kind of see him for who he is and just see him as he's just like out here trying his best, you know, like definition of we out here, just like trying to navigate the situation. And so many times through this chapter, he's just kind of like, I don't really know how I ended up here, thinking about everything that he's been through. I mean, every single person doesn't need to be like the ultimate power player. Mm-hmm. And maybe he will be. I mean, maybe he will go out in this like super heroic, beautiful way, or maybe he will just kind of like fizzle and go. And that's the story of, and that's just kind of the lesson that we're supposed to learn is like not everybody dies the hero that they spend their whole life trying to be.
Do you think that the shakiness of what's been going on with Maureen and Danny could have been helped now and before if, because Barristan's in this chapter thinking a lot about his age, mm-hmm. and about that, like that you were talking about with Dario, him being less effective because of it. But I also think that he was thinking about his effectiveness in general, like his ability to actually do the thing.
Well, because he was like, I should have anticipated Daenerys,
right.
Like this whole thing. I should have known, read the sign, saw the writing on the wall.
Sure, but also what went down with Aerys in the past, mm-hmm. and the way that was all handled. Mm-hmm. Maybe, like, do you think that maybe it's possible that part of what we're learning with Barry is that even though he's really effective, he's not really that good. And so I'm wondering, do you think things could have been better? Like he himself had like the mind of someone that's similar to Tyrion, if it could have been better for her in this situation.
She would have made like different. No, because I think that Daenerys has such a strong sense of self and of what she's setting out to do. She really, I mean, all the stuff that she's been doing hasn't been Barristan's idea.
Yeah, I know. But like, so I feel like someone like Tyrion or someone a little bit less, really, I'm just saying Tyrion because I know he's really smart and because obviously we've seen him depicted with her, but let's just say any other person that's as someone who has as much experience as Barristan. I mean, he should really be the best at it, but I feel like he has this natural check down within him that he relies on. Like this laziness where he's just like, oh, but you know, whatever goes in line with the vows.
Yeah. But I think that that's also him just being like a little bit self-critical and just him spending a lot of time kind of thinking on the decisions that he's made. So like, everybody kind of looks at themselves and knocks you down a few points kind of thing based on reality. So I don't think that Barristan, I don't think anybody else could have necessarily swayed Danny's trajectory because I think that she went into this whole situation with a strong idea of what she wanted to do and she knew and she was told many times that it was by many different people from many different places that this was going to be an impossible task and that she should probably just move on and not really sink her teeth into something that's not her place necessarily, but she did it anyway, you know? And so I think that she trusts Barristan and I think that he's a strong person to be by her side.
Like ride or die.
He's really loyal to her and he deeply cares about her, but I don't think that he or necessarily anybody else is going to like completely change who Daenerys is at her core and like what her core choices are at this point along. I mean, if he even had anticipated what was going to happen at the Fighting Pits, what would he have done? Like, what would he have been able to do about it?
I think it maybe would have started a lot earlier than that. Not necessarily been something that he'd like acted on then. I'm more so thinking what's better to have as your head of your Kingsguard, someone that's legendarily strong at fighting, but sort of even with their own mind, like self-blocking with the code, air quotes, or someone that has a little more of a gray attitude on things, like a Tyrion, who's going to be a little bit more crafty in their effectiveness of their, potentially in their effectiveness of the way they advise you, Like, what's better? Someone who can fight really well with you, or someone that can see things in a way that kind of scumbags would, mm-hmm. and like think like them, and even openly like act. Because in this chapter, Barristan is, you know, so twisted about and suspicious, and, you know, doesn't want to get caught being treasonous about doing anything that seems particularly wiggly, like Game of Thrones.
I mean, he, you know, he takes his vow seriously.
So what's better? You know, that's what I'm wondering.
I mean, I think that's his, that could potentially be the ultimate question.
Yeah.
How, if and how he dies, like, what does that answer for him?
Well, if you're listening to this podcast still, please let us know what you think about that question. I'm curious to know.
Yeah.
Would you like to move on to Owens?
Yeah.
What do you think about this chapter first?
I thought it was good. Like I said, it's a thrill to be in Barristan's POV. So I liked it. I thought it was good. I mean, there's not like a ton of drama necessarily, like movement necessarily. Mm-hmm. We get a lot of just self-reflection, but I loved the sequence of him talking about that first meal that he had after he was knighted and how important that was.
That was like, so cool.
It's just, I love those.
Talking about emotions, choking when he was saying the lines.
Yeah, like so I just think that's really cool. He's a really powerful figure. And he's so
passionate. He has like reverence for the things that he does.
And that's why I can't necessarily blame him for putting so much stock into, he's just trying to do his job. And like, you know, so.
I think that I'm a little bit, just pessimistic in general because I know how much he knows.
Yeah.
So it's like, I'd like to be more like that if I could, but it seems almost a little limiting, but it also seems kind of nice that mm-hmm. he's so resolute, so stalwart.
That's the kind of guy you want on your side.
Right.
Even if you don't necessarily think he's making the right decision from our POV.
You may have just answered my question early then.
My own, I already said what my own was earlier, LOL, but I just thought that moment with the shooting dragons out of the sky, that just made me laugh. I felt like there were so many layers to it just based off of participating in the A Song of Ice and Fire community. So I'm going to give my own to that. And I'm going to give my own to Barristan talking about playing the Game of Thrones because I love it when the things like that come up.
Mm-hmm. That's my own.
Oh, is it? Mm-hmm. Well, there you go.
I have an LOL, though. If His Grace wishes for me to remove myself from court, His Radiance.
They do things differently there than they do in Westeros.
I get it, but Radiance. And then, trying to find it. I'll read that quote. The worst were those who played the Game of Thrones.
You win or you die.
He just can't help but to just, yeah. He's like, no, not those guys. The worst are the people who play the Game of Thrones. Been around too many of them.
And we've got an own from at P94 at home who says, God's so cool to get inside the head of the legendary Barristan Selmy. This dude's probably a treasure trove of information. Own to this line. In the Viper's Pit that was Marine, honor seemed as silly as a fool's motley. I was trying to think of that this whole time. Okay, great. That line sets the tone for how dangerous this place and the people that Barristan is dealing with in Marine are.
Gods, I was strong then.
The best response ever. If you want to send us in your own or your thoughts, feelings, etc., you can get in touch with us in a couple different ways. You can send us an email to contact@gameofowns.com, or you can find us across our different social media platforms, Twitter, OnlyFans, Instagram, Facebook, by searching for Game of Owns.
Our next chapter on the podcast, I don't even need to look this up because I'm looking forward to it so much. The Iron Suitor.
So,
Vic Greyjoy gets his crazy hand.
I'm so excited. You can find our reading order at afeastwithdragons.com if you want to catch up or if you want to read ahead for our next chapter.
Oh, also, George R. R. Martin, tweeted a long time ago that he tweeted this certain day. I think he tweeted like in 2015 or something. Yeah. Was it a tweet or was it a blog post?
Or he made like a comment. I can't remember exactly. We should probably look it up before we even talk about it. But
yeah, someone can look it up.
Yeah.
The gist is, we probably should, but he's basically said that, I'm going to talk about it anyway. He said, if I don't have the book written by this time, you can put me in jail or something.
That's really funny. I love that kind of energy. Off
date. Yeah. It was like 2020. And it's 2020 kind of now.
Well, the date has passed, so citizen's arrest.
I'm cool with it.
Me too. I'm cool with it too. We have this discussion all the time. Like, I think we're obviously very excited for the next book, but there's so many things that we have left to talk about. So take your time, brother.
Take time, brother, with the two little dots over the U.
That's how, what's his name? Who I always forget would say that.
Who? Oh, talking about Tormund? No. Or no, oh, Cold Hands.
No, nobody
it's from... Cold Hands.
No, I'm thinking about your favorite YouTuber.
Which one?
I always forget his name.
What does he do?
He died.
Oh, Fed Smoker.
Yeah, Fed Smoker. Yeah. Because he says brother a lot, too.
Oh, yeah, he did. Rest in peace.
Rest in peace.
Well, this is fun. We'll be back soon. In the meantime, we've got 400 and something damn episodes that you can go back and listen to if you're bored. Also, there's lots of other stuff to check out these days. What's something you're getting into?
Have you all seen The Witcher?
The Witcher, yeah. The Witcher's good. Han won't watch it for some reason.
Can we just wrap up the podcast?
I love The Witcher. And for some reason, Han doesn't want to watch it. I think we're done now.
Bye, everybody.
She's like, I don't want to comment on this.
We don't need to fill time at the end of the episode.
No, I'm not trying to fill time. I'm just hanging out.
I mean, if you want to talk about the stuff that we've been watching on Netflix. Watching The Babysitter's Club. I don't have time to watch The Witcher.
90 Day Fiancé for me.
We are both
the 90 Day.
We're both pretty big 90 Day fans, but we're all watching different portions of 90 Day.
Yeah, I've been going backwards. I started with the latest one, and I'm starting to go back, and I feel like I'm definitely being brainwashed for sure.
Absolutely, but that's like the best reality show.
And by best, you mean the most brainwashed?
Just the most, yeah. It's pretty interesting.
Well, we're going to work on that as much as possible for this podcast, so beware.
And I think we're done.
Melt it down and add it to the others.